Hang in there. It is.
Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Welcome back to another episode of The Smiley Show. At time of recording, it is Sunday, April 6th, early morning. You might, if you're watching on YouTube, you're seeing some weird soft lighting you may not be accustomed to. That is because over the corner over there, Smiley, bags are packed. We're about to load them into the trusty Toyota Prius and hop on the road and head down to Augusta, Georgia for the Masters. Could not be more excited. Got the allergy meds loaded up, doing all sorts of things like that. You're, of course, still in San Antonio waiting for the final round of Valero Texas Open, taking a little sip of the coffee there. How are we feeling this morning?
Oh, it's freezing here.
So is it?
I took Fran and Anna Carter to the airport this morning really early and had a wind chill of 32. So this golf course played so hard yesterday. It's going to play even harder today. It's humming out of the north. And I forgot how difficult this place plays into a north wind. It's ridiculously hard. And we'll see. I mean, if you're in one of those last couple of groups and shoot 3 under, you sit around and wait.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know what the environmental dynamics are there. I mean, obviously, maybe some desert, some Texas type of things coming into play. But just hearing everyone talk, I was listening to the radio broadcast on SiriusXM yesterday, obviously watched some of the coverage, and just the reaction to the winds and the way it can change.
Crazy.
Thursday, Friday, how they play, you know, relative to Saturday. It's insane.
I mean, I was sweating so much on Friday. It was like 87 degrees at the happy hour desk. And then Saturday, I mean, it's cold in the morning, and then it's even colder Sunday.
Well, our hope is that before you hop on a plane later tonight to fly to Augusta so that we can kick off our week of coverage there, that we'll have you catch up with us for a little recap of the Valero Texas Open, where it stands. Maybe I'll pull into a rest stop in the Prius and pop a camera on a tripod.
How long is your drive?
It's usually about, I think it's like 4:45 on the GPS.
That's great. That's not bad at all. I was going to guess it was like 7.5. So that's...
Atlanta 6. Yeah, it's pretty doable with some stops. I'll tell you a quick story here is that I was on a bad streak of failing to service my Prius a couple years ago.
Mm.
And also, like, you know, you don't know when hybrid is off or on sometimes. Like, you think it's off and it's on. So I was there and I forgot to turn it off, but the battery died on the Prius.
Ooh.
And I had to leave because it was Friday night to drive back because I was going back for Walker's first Easter that weekend. And so the guy jumps my car. He's like, your battery's at a critically low level. You cannot turn this car off. So I drove around the corner. I put gas in it. And I took a bathroom break. And I drove 4.5 hours straight to Durham. No stops. Kept the car running the entire time.
Okay, so you didn't turn the car off when you put the gas in?
just didn't turn the car off. Just figured, all right, we got to roll the dice here a little bit.
Is that fine? Like, is that okay?
Apparently so. Apparently that's like a thing, you know. So
okay.
Who knows? But yeah. There you go. There you have it. That was the true test of the road trip duration from Augusta to Durham. So
okay.
We made it work. Hopefully we don't deal with any of that this time around. I've had my car serviced. The battery's in good shape. So Smiley, the other exciting thing I've talked to you about is we are welcoming an old friend back into the show, an old partner. If you remember our President's Cup coverage from last fall, that was presented by Ahead, and they are back in the mix for a nice little run here starting this week. And the cool thing about Ahead is this is a company that they love the game of golf. They're investing in it. They're partnered with a bunch of caddies, which, as you know, the lifeblood of the game, where you get all your intel and your information on a weekly basis. So cool to see them supporting them. And, of course, our show as well. And basically what Ahead is going to help us do on a week-to-week, show-to-show basis is preview different parts of tournament structure, whether it's, you know, previewing for the course, whether it's looking back at who played the best, whether who melted the ball the best this week, speed and impact. We're doing some ball speed deep dives thanks to Ahead. So here's what I got for you on Ahead. Ahead builds and manages digital platforms that power the most successful organizations in the world. Their consultative approach, unmatched engineering, and innovative solutions combine to accelerate the impact of technology in every client that they serve. Ahead's a strategic partner for enterprise clients, and they help them navigate the path towards digital transformation, much like an expert caddy, reading the course ahead and providing the winning combination of technology and execution. You can learn more about all that at ahead.com. And so, Smiley, here's where we're going to start is the first ahead segment is going to be very big picture. We want the look ahead to the week that we have for the first major of the season. There's been a lot of kind of sort of variables up in the air. We've had guys that we thought were favorites at the beginning of the year, missing cuts, not in great form. We've had some injured guys. We've had a weather forecast that's changed from perfect to maybe a little bit cooler and chillier than we thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. And we're also keeping tabs on that LIV Golf leaderboard in Miami and seeing some familiar faces at the top of that that could be in contention this week. So give me a little look ahead here, Smiley, at the week to come.
Well, you know, I get so excited before every first major, you know, being the Masters every year. And you have so many players that are in your brain of this is going to be the guy this week. And then that list just continues to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And especially with LIV Miami happening this week and seeing some players who would be potential contenders from that bunch playing well at the Masters. It thickened the plot a little bit when it came to my big board of who I like at the Masters next week. They all aren't going to play well and they're all not going to win. They're all not going to contend. So I'm going to have to find a way to shrink the board a little bit to figure out exactly who's going to play well. But the one thing that I am so, so, so excited about is that the weather is going to be so good Monday. So tomorrow in Augusta is going to be a bit of a wash, but the rest of the week, it's going to be so good. It's not going to be too hot, maybe a little cool in the mornings, but getting up to like 68, 70 degrees every day. It is the ideal spring Augusta Masters weather.
I think I was a little worried about it, but the more I started to think about it, especially if you're wearing pants all week long, as we will be, you start walking around that place with the elevation change, it gets steamy real quick. 68 starts feeling like 73, 74. Uh-huh. So I'm coming around on that. It's going to be perfect cool weather. Won't be too hot. Won't be sweaty out there. And just about as good as it gets for a Masters. So, and you note the names on that LIV leaderboard. Let me just hit a few of them that are in the top 10 heading into the final round. Bryson DeChambeau, Sergio Garcia, Patrick Reed, Phil Mickelson, John Rahm, Dustin Johnson. All guys who, they can get it around Augusta National pretty good there. Do you like any of those guys given current form? I mean, I know we're going to do a full preview show once we get on site and we kind of walk the course, but just right off the top, any of those guys feel like this is the front runner from LIV for me?
Well, I think you always got to start with, you know, their top players, which is the no-brainers, the Bryson DeChambeau, the Joaquin Neiman, you know, John Rahm, of course, Brooks Koepka. Those are the players who we're definitely not going to overlook. The player that continues to seem like he's been playing very well over the last year, really even two players, is Sergio Garcia and Patrick Reed. Those are two guys that I've just kind of kept on my radar of, oh boy. That really throws a wrench into what I think when people are watching on the couch, if P. Reed and Sergio get into contention, they are the classic like antagonists of what could be what Scottie Scheffler could go up against. And I've just been very impressed by how well Sergio has played at his age. I think he's a guy that's still motivated, still wants to make that Ryder Cup team. Same with Patrick Reed, who's done some really nice stuff over the last 6 months from watching him and his scores. But I think you got to look at the top of the leaderboard. We'll see what ends up happening at the end of the day with Bryson DeChambeau. Based on what I read on Twitter, is that he's having a very good putting week, but it is a par 68 at Augusta National for Bryson. Actually, 67. Is that what it is?
67.
Par 67.
So we're judging him against that standard. Yeah.
Well, hey, I know he had a pretty good year last year at the Masters. It's a good golf course for him, right? He's got the length. That should be a huge advantage for him. So I don't know. I'm very intrigued by how this Sunday goes. As you know, I think the golf courses that they typically play are not necessarily quality major tests. Mm-hmm. We know Doral is a really hard golf course. We know it from them playing on the PGA Tour for years. So I want to see kind of who brings their A stuff on Sunday, who ends up winning this golf tournament. Not to say it's going to be the reason why they're going to play well at the Masters, but it definitely would be a nice indication of, okay, who's ready to take on the test of a weekend in Augusta.
It's so interesting because you have that on the LIV side. And then if you look at the usual set of suspects from the PGA Tour, I get the feeling it's going to be a really interesting Masters, and maybe a first timer comes out of, you know, ends up putting on the green jacket, because it's, you know, Scottie Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, we're looking kind of at their health coming into this year. Rory McIlroy probably in the best overall form this season on the PGA Tour, but of course, you know, has some, you know, some scar tissue at Augusta National to kind of get over if he's going to win this thing, which would be incredible to see. Ludvig Åberg was in that final group last year, you know, kind of an up and down form this year as one, but also when he's not playing well, he's playing pretty poorly. You have a guy in Colin Morikawa who was in the mix last year coming down the stretch, who has done everything he can but win a golf tournament, you know, going back about a year and a half, you know, in terms of the quality of his golf. So I just, and then we have guys that are maybe a little further down the board, like a Will Zalatoris that you feel like could be a course, good course fit out there. So I'm really excited to get on property, and I think we're in for a really interesting week, and maybe one that unfolds in a way that we can't really put a good prediction on this. It could be an unexpected winner this week. Oh no, you disagree. Okay. All right.
I think to a certain degree that it's, that it could be an unexpected winner for the most part. I think it's going to be a top, be a Top Gun for the most part. I'd be surprised if we saw you know, a name that we're not accustomed to see at the top of the leaderboard. But
would you call Will Zalatoris a top dog?
Hell yeah.
Okay, all right. That's I guess that's what I'm saying. And like, and he's been in and around that leaderboard, but I'm kind of going the direction where I would not be surprised to see him win, even though he won't be in the top 5 or 10, let's say, on an odds board, is maybe my take.
Totally.
I'm not saying a complete unknown.
He's okay. We're on the same page, because he would be in the top 20 of the odds boards, which that to me seems like that's not, you know, just some, it's crazy. Crazy out of the blue. But listen, there's other players too that when we just talk about age and players who have played better as they've gotten older. Sergio Garcia is obviously you know, a player that's played very well throughout his entire career. But I look at the PGA Tour for a similar example of a player that's continued to get better and better and better. That's Shane Lowry. He's another guy, too, that I've got my eye on this week. I really feel that Shane, maybe he doesn't quite have the length, but he has so much control of his golf ball, a very, very good putter. And I think just the conditions of the golf course, I can't decide if I'd rather it be really, really hard for Shane or perfect weather, because with perfect weather, he's very, very good at hitting numbers, very good iron player, drives it very straight. And with his putting, it wouldn't surprise me either if he was just kind of hanging around.
I like it. I like it, man. We have so many names we got to get through, and we're excited to do it. We're doing it again this year. The big tease that we can finally kind of come through on is we're back at T-Bones on a very, very late Tuesday night. So if you're listening to this and you're going to be in and around Augusta, Georgia on Tuesday night, come see us. We had some nice visitors that dropped by the show last year. But yeah, that's the plan, is get the T-Bones on a Tuesday and run through this whole thing and make some picks and get a full preview done.
Well, for those that are listening and they get distracted by outside noise, may not be your episode.
Expect some ambiance. Some late night bar and steakhouse ambiance, please.
Remember some of the advertisement slips we were getting last year from a couple workers?
Yes, we had some interesting approaches, we'll say, of things that were not read on the podcast. But it's good to have an audience, I'll tell you that much. So if you'd like to be that audience this year, please come join us.
T-Bones
Tuesday night, about 10 p.m. We'll be there a little bit earlier. I guess it's a band playing in the parking lot. This has been the sort of flow of the last couple of years. Is a band goes off, and then we just kind of sit there and set up, and then we fire away as soon as they're done playing about 10 p.m. So I love starting you that way.
That's so past my bedtime, man. That's past my bedtime.
That's all of our bedtime, but that'll be the preview. And you know, obviously we're kind of launching into a little bit of a preview with this episode as well. So this is something we're about to toss to you that we recorded earlier last week when Smiley was back at home. We had a little more time to dig into it. Really excited about this next sort of deal. We're taking something that the Masters put together with Scottie Scheffler that was just phenomenally done, and giving you a little bit more of an in-depth preview of certain holes on this course that we think are going to be pivotal to this major championship. So we'll send you over to that right now.
There was a really, really cool video that's worth checking out. If you go to the Masters YouTube, which I believe is just youtube.com/@the Masters, and they put out a video that is titled "Every Hole at Augusta National with Scottie Scheffler." And if you are like me, I mean, Smiley, you've got an incredibly photographic memory for courses, so you don't need these refreshers. For me, I like to kind of do a flyover before every big event just to refamiliarize myself with the course. Don't do that. Do this video instead, because even better than looking at the visuals of the course is having a two-time champion walk you through each of those holes individually and tell you where you can hit it, where you can't hit it, you know, what the recurring themes are in each of these holes, the way he thinks about it, which I thought was incredibly cool. It's about a half hour video worth a full watch to get you prepped for the Masters. And what we are going to do here, without giving away the whole video, is I've pulled six holes from Augusta National that Scottie Scheffler is going to take us through. We got three from the first nine, three from the second nine. And I'm just going to play for you, Smiley, a brief little snippet of Smiley talking about that hole and just tee you up for your extended thoughts on this hole as a person who's obviously played here in the tournament itself, but also has walked the grounds and been around as a commentator the last few years. So that being the premise, Smiley, any lead-in thoughts, just overall overarching thoughts on the course itself or just, you know, setting the table for the six holes we're about to dig into?
Well, there's plenty of strategy that goes into Augusta National and way more to what it looks like on TV. So it's having Scottie Scheffler, who's won, let's see, two Masters now, be able to walk us through some of his thoughts. Simple at times, but also for someone who has played it like myself, it was really cool to hear his perspective. So we'll see how I'm pretty sure we're going to match up on most of these. I've seen about half of these descriptions, so I'm excited to see them all.
Okay, so we're going to start at the par 4 fifth hole, Magnolia.
Off the tee on the fifth hole, anything you can do to get the ball in the fairway while avoiding those bunkers. The bunkers is a pretty significant penalty because you pretty much know you're not going to be able to get the ball to the green if you hit into bunkers. You have such a long club in, and you have that huge ridge that goes through the middle of the green, and the pin is typically tucked up against that ridge. So depending on where the pin is, you just try to set yourself up for your third shot. The fifth hole is one of those, you know, that a 4 is a really, really good score, and a 5 is not that bad of a score.
So there's your first tee up from Scotty. And I believe I was reading something in the last couple of days, maybe a conversation, Jeff Shackelford and Ben Crenshaw talking about how this hole was meant in some ways to be a reverse of the road hole at St. Andrews, which I found pretty interesting. So
that's cool. Yeah.
Let's just start with the fifth and just what he's talking about in terms of strategy out the tee and just the way you have to approach this difficult green. Because this one always seems to you know, pose a real challenge with that first tee shot for guys.
I think it's the most one of the more important tee shots on the golf course. It determines whether you're going to make par or you're just pretty much just playing to not make double bogey. And as far as just how far it is to these bunkers, I have my yardage book here that we're going to kind of follow along with. It's 313 yards over the bunker on the left side. So that's the second bunker we're talking about. The first one, it's 291 over it. It's if you happen to hit it into the second bunker, that bunker would be much better when it comes to just a general layup where you can actually kind of get a wedge out to where you get a little further up. Both bunkers stink, but it's better to be in the next one just so you can get a little bit further up. This tee shot, though, it used to be very claustrophobic back on this tee. They opened up the whole area. This was probably, oh gosh, what year did they do this? The fifth, because it used to be right back behind the fourth tee, where guys would have to wait for players to hit from the fourth hole, the par 3, and then you would hit. And most of the time it was just a 3 wood, but now it's so far back there that it's always going to be a driver for the most part, unless it firms up. But I remember back in 2016, I believe this was on I can't remember what day it was. Maybe it was Saturday, but we had a helping wind and I could easily cover the bunker. So this was back in 16. Of course, the golf ball wasn't going as far, but the tee shot was made way, way easier when you could cover these bunkers. Now, I don't think anybody can cover the bunkers. So with that being said, it's such an important tee shot, maybe the one of more important tee shots on the golf course. But even if you do hit the fairway, it doesn't necessarily mean anything because it's still a hole and you can make a 6 on from the middle of the fairway. Most of the time you're hitting shots from, oh gosh, it's about a 6 iron or so, or 7 iron type of shot to a green that is so pitched up with an elephant, right? It's about 10 yards in and it kind of works its way up to the right.
and everything past that works for the most part to that back bunker. And the back of the green all slips to the left, where that back bunker actually is a really good leave. I found that it sometimes is just as easy to make par from that back bunker than it is coming up short and trying to two putt over that hill.
Yeah, and it's the dynamics of that tee shot are so interesting, right? Because as you're discussing, you know, if you hit it into one of those two fairway bunkers, you know, not only are you going to have issues with the face and how far can you advance it, and you're hitting a layup, and then you have sort of a tweener wedge, depending on how close you lay it up into a green that's difficult. It's going to be firm. You're going to have to spin it a lot to stop it, you know, or you could lose over the back of the green, depending on the angle you're coming at it from. And also you have trees lining the right side or the left side of that hole that, it, depending on how far left you go in that bunker, are going to keep you from having a direct look at that green. But if you bail out further away from those bunkers on the right, now all of a sudden that 6 iron is turning into a 5 iron or 4 iron or more.
You could hit it into a really bad spot, right, too, in the pine straw over there. There's bushes. You could totally lose a golf ball over there to the right. So if you happen to hit a little high, you could be hit re-teeing sometimes at the fifth hole. Very rarely, though. For the most part, you'll find your golf ball. It just depends on how straight you hit it. And I remember Jordan in 16 on Sunday hit it down there left, didn't hit in the bunker, but was able to like hook something up there by, over by the right grandstands. And he was lucky that he got it far enough pin high to where he was almost past the ridge in the slope to where he's chipping across the green. It was still a really difficult shot because he had to get it up and over on the green with a whole lot of spin. Of course, he hits it up there. I believe he makes a par. And I was just thinking to myself, how is this dude just go par par on the last two holes? I thought he hit it into the bamboo the prior hole at four. Then he gets up and down from long right at five and just, but it just goes to show you that even on days you hit it poorly, there are places to miss, sit out at Augusta National to where you can manage it, find a way to take care of the par fives and then just eliminate double bogeys.
It's interesting. And we're not going to feature the eighth hole in the discussion today, but you know, Scotty notes the left side of eight as being one of the few places where you cannot miss it because there's a lots of low lying bushes. And obviously he talks a lot about the emphasis of needing to be in the fairway in good position off the tee, you know, because of all the things we're discussing with second shots of just the angles you're approaching and the difficulty of the greens. But at the same time, if you hit it, you know, into the forest, some of these, you know, these tree lined areas, for the most part, you do have a punch out look, with the exception of holes like eight and a few others where there is some of that low lying brush where really you bring a big number into play.
That's right.
So let's head next to the seventh hole, also a par four, Pampas.
Especially on Sunday when they put the pin in the bowl, or really any day, that hole is typically at least a half a shot penalty if you miss the fairway. If you miss the fairway and then you punch up there around the green, it can be really tough up and down, even when the pin's in the bowl, because you can't get enough spin to bring it off of the ridge in the back. And so when you're in the fairway and you got a short club, typically you can spin it and get it really close to the pin. But if you hit up there too close to the green after you miss the fairway, it can leave for a pretty tough up and down. And so that's a hole typically where it's extremely important to get the ball in play.
This is, I wanted to share this one because if you watch this full clip, you're going to hear Scotty say about 30 times how important it is to hit the fairway off the tee because of the way it changes the characteristics of your second shot. And I thought that one, that last comment was interesting in the context of, okay, if you're out of position, you have the ability, as we were just discussing, to get back in position, but it could really make what would be a normally a straightforward, you know, short little pitch shot or little wedge shot difficult because of what you might need to do on the next shot. Like if you need to spin it, if you don't have enough time or space to spin it back off a different slope, or if it's going to be really firm, a shot that normally would be gettable on a normal course, there's this sort of risk reward trade-off at Augusta National that makes it, you know, considerably more difficult. So that was interesting to me, just hearing Scotty talk about the seventh hole.
When you miss this fairway, like if you miss it out there to the right in the middle of those trees or the left, there's so many trees that are in the way to where you never have a gap. It's always going to be a punch cut if you're in the right, or it's a punch hook if you're there to the left and you are looking to put, actually there's three bunkers that are short of this green that guard it. And depending on where the hole location is the bunker that you're aiming at. For the most part, the front middle bunker is always going to be okay, but there's other bunkers that are technically preferable. You never want to be in the back bunkers. That's pretty much always going to be no good to any of the pins. Very rarely would you ever get in the back bunker and get up and down, just because of that green so pitch back to front. And Augusta National, they don't do anything by accident. One of the cool things that they do at the seventh hole is that when you get down to the bottom of the hill, there's a ridge that runs through the middle of this green from north to south. And there's a big, big scoreboard behind that green. And when you're in the middle of that fairway, that scoreboard is right in line with where the ridge is. And nobody would ever know that unless somebody told you that was a veteran or a member. So that was something that was really beneficial for me as the first time playing, is that I get to this hole and I'm like, where's this ridge exactly? Because they'll put the pins very close to the ridge, especially on the left side of the green. They'll use a front left pin, which is very, very difficult because you got to fall off left of the green, and then you have fall off to the front right port of the green, where that's that bucket pin that Scotty was talking about. But right on line with it from the middle of the fairway, that pin, that's that left center pin, pretty much you can always tell when you've hit it too far right, because most of the time you would be hitting it right at that base of the scoreboard.
I think the other thing that's interesting too is, and it doesn't always come through on the broadcast, is just how dramatic the change of elevation can be when you're actually out there walking the property.
You feel it.
Oh, you feel it a ton. And we go to the next hole, the ninth here, Carolina Cherry, we'll have a similar discussion. But, you know, how, I guess as a player, if you're already trying to calculate things in like on a windy day, mm-hmm. and you know, the firmness of a relative green, and then you throw in a level of elevation change, where Scotty was talking a little bit about that in this video as well, of just, you know, knowing which holes he can really get aggressive with. We'll get to that on the second nine with the 14th hole, you know, where it suited his shot shape, but also knowing where he really can't go at a pin because it's, you know, for any number of these factors that he's trying to take into account, including elevation change, just makes it difficult to get the number exactly right. And the penalty for missing can be severe.
Well, the seventh hole, just like you're talking about, when you play shots that are uphill, this is why Augusta National is so unique, is that typically when players get yardage books, they always have what the elevation change is pretty much to every head. And there's no elevation change given to you in these yardage books. So I don't know when these caddies are able to go out and do this, but there is a ton of homework and experience based off of playing these holes of how much uphill shots actually play. So for instance, some uphill shots play much shorter than they typically would based on how uphill you are in the club that you're hitting into the green. That happens often with wedges that are coming in. Sometimes it's not plus 10 quite as much. It plays maybe a little bit more like plus 6 up the hill on certain shots. I'm not saying exactly the seventh hole. But I just think that that's a really unique part about Augusta National. And two other things I want to mention about this hole. It's one of my favorite holes on the golf course, is that the club that you pick off the tee, if you want to hit this fairway, if you hit long iron, if you hit a three wood, kind of like Scotty's talking about, you'll end up on the downslope. And if you're on the downslope hitting to an elevated green, the ball is going to come out lower. That first bounce is going to be coming in not quite as steep, so that first bounce could technically bounce over the green, maybe not quite as much spin, especially to the right hole location, which is my favorite hole location to watch and spectate on the entire golf course. When they put it four paces off the right side of that seventh green, it is the best seat at Augusta National. You will never be closer to the action ever in your life, and you 1000% will get hit in the knee by a ball that's coming in because you're that close. It's by far the best spot to go and spectate golf, because you seriously feel like you can just reach your hand out and be a part of the action.
It's so cool. I love that pin. There's a little hot tip for anyone who's going to be out there on property this next week. Go grab a chair, plant one there early on the back right side of seven. Okay, let's go to the ninth hole, Carolina Cherry.
Number nine is a hole where when you hit it in the fairway looks really wide because the ball typically chases down into that low area, but the tee shot plays a lot narrower than it looks, just with the overhanging trees on the left and the fairway slopes left to right and kind of pushes you down into the trees on the right. Once again, it's another hole where it's essential to get the ball in play and then trying to get the ball in the right tier going into the green. This is one of those holes where you're hitting from so low to such an elevated green and the tiers there are really, really small, and so it can be very tough to judge the distance. And it's a hole where you cannot miss it short.
So again, themes that are recurring here, the impact of elevation change, trying to get those numbers right, but also something he said off the top that you just noted about everything at Augusta National Golf Club being very intentional, and just the way that Alistair McKenzie's design is set up to look at a visual and think that this place on the golf course is safe, when in reality it is not. It's playing mind games with you off the tee, where you're trying to take a certain line, but you know your brain wants you to bail out away from that, and that gets you into trouble. And this, you know, to Scotty's point, looks like it'd be a pretty straightforward tee shot, but when you look at the way the ground moves down the landing area and things like that, it becomes more complicated.
Yeah, totally. And in this tee shot, it's so important to not miss it left. Left is jail. You got those bunkers that guard the left side of the screen, so you never have a chance to run anything up. Even if you have a shot, you don't have a shot, because you need to play short and to the right, unless somehow in the world you hook it far enough to where you're in the first fairway. And if you're in the first fairway, that's still even a really hard shot, because the angle is so shallow from that spot. But important to definitely hit this fairway, of course. You could play from the right pine straw. We've seen plenty of people hit shots on the green from the right pine straw and make birdies. So not the end of the world if you push that tee shot. But he's exactly right talking about hitting from a low area. And sometimes when it's not firm enough, the ball doesn't get all the way down the hill. And when it doesn't, I found that it was really, really difficult to hit it high enough with the firm greens, especially to the front pin. That front pin to me is really difficult to get close to that hole. And the further you get down the hill to the flat, the easier that shot is. But when you're still on that side slope and down slope hitting that shot, I wasn't somebody that could hit it high enough to where I was able to really hold that section of the green. Now, Scottie Scheffler, he hits it really high and probably can hit it soft enough with a high landing apex where he might be okay. And that's where the topics of, you know, what does it take to compete out at Augusta National? And sometimes people undervalue that, just the ability to hit it high and to be able to get to pins that other guys couldn't get to. I played well that week, and there were whole occasions that I couldn't get to that other guys could.
That is fascinating to me. And you know, just I think that the care and design, and then even on a year-to-year basis, as you know, the members of the club evaluate the changes they want to make and why they want to make them, and the ones that are put into place are always ones that seem to retain the original intent of the challenge of each of these holes. You know, if you're going to play a safe shot, it's going to make your approach that much more difficult, because it's going to be at a lower height and it's going to be more difficult to spin the ball and stop the ball, especially on a day when it gets nice and firm and crispy. And so just each of these, you know, risk reward trade-offs, you know, you can try to really bus driver all around this property, but as Scotty notes, like for him, the priority is finding a fairway before it is hitting it really, really long. Length helps, but not if you're wayward on some of these shots. So I'm just getting the tingles, the goosebumps that we're talking about. Just getting out there and saying, well,
"We ain't
guys
done
play.
Yet. We ain't done yet at nine. We got more to do at nine because you could always miss right of this green. Right of the green, you can always play from. If you get past pin high, right, then it's difficult. But and if you get in the bunker and you're past pin high, you're playing for five, and you'll be lucky to make a five, especially when the wind is off to the left. If you're short of pin high in the left bunker, it's something that you might be able to manage. It's not exactly where you want to be, but it's something that you definitely could pull off. But I think the one thing you often see to that front hole location is players that land it right on top or just short of the false front, takes that bounce, a little bit of spin, comes all the way back. And that pitch shot, you want to talk about one that, you know, if you don't execute that you're going to be hitting it again, that's definitely one of them. That front hole location, especially that front left hole location, is typically Sunday, and a really good one, really, really good one. And then also the very back left hole location, that's also a really good spot to watch golf, because you kind of get really close to the action too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so that does it for the first nine portion of this discussion. We're going to head to the second nine, and the place we're going to start is, I think, arguably one of the most difficult holes on the course and a real turning point in the 2024 edition of this tournament, the 11th hole, White Dogwood, where we saw both Colin Morikawa and Ludvig Åberg find the water and effectively kind of end their chances of winning this tournament. So let's hear Scotty talking about the 11th hole, White Dogwood.
The back nine on Sunday, this last year, especially when the golf course was getting really firm, it was playing so difficult. And there's a pond there on the left, and you're hitting from an elevated fairway shot. And it, once again, it's tough to get the wind right back there. If you see my ball going at the pin there, it's typically an accident because I'm aiming basically at the right edge of the green. I think the goal when you step up on that tee box every time is to make a par, and a birdie is definitely a huge added bonus. I'd be interested to see how many people actually make birdie on Sunday there.
That's actually a fun piece of trivia, Smiley. This is going to be hard to place, but just take a stab at this. Since 1942, how many birdies and eagles do you think there have been on the 11th and final round? It's a lot of years.
1942.
It's the only
stat. How many years is that?
A lot of them. Not a math pod, but you can imagine.
140.
That's a pretty solid guess. 256. Okay. But if you consider that's, you know, however many,
I didn't know,
you know, 80 plus years or whatever it is of golf, and there's only been that many, that doesn't feel super high. I think it's, this hole is so interesting to me, and I love to hear like the dynamics of the way the player thinks about this, because it feels like if you're chasing, and especially you're moving to the last nine holes of your tournament on a Sunday, and that pin's kind of back to the left, you can't help it, but your brain wants to kind of go pin hunting and try to kind of make some birdies and try to catch up. And here it can spell the end of your golf tournament. And just the amount of discipline required to just stay committed to the right edge of that green, and especially factoring in wind variables as well. Just like what a challenge this second shot at the 11th hole presents.
Yeah, it's the easiest fairway on the golf course to hit. Very, very wide fairway. Traditionally, the accuracy on that, it's always going to be at or near the top for the players. It's changed over the years, too, because it used to be very wooded over there to the right. Now it's very specific trees that block your way, but still add an element of not just a punch out, which typically you know, at Augusta National, I really like wooded areas like the one at 7, you know, where you get it in there, you just have to punch out. So it really requires you to hit good drives. But I think there's the 11th hole just adds to those just the specific trees that they have over there on the right. It makes you and almost baits you into trying to pull off a shot when you do hit it right off the tee. And there's so many mounds that are short and to the right that propel balls to the left into that penalty area. And so let's just start there. Let's start back at the tee box. It aims you up over there to the right, trying to bait you to hit it over there. Really, there's more room left than you think off the tee. So when you get to the top of the hill, like you're talking about, you're always looking at the right edge of the green. But that up and down has been gotten so much more difficult. They've kind of lowered that area a little bit to the right. So they've made that up and down much more challenging. It used to be, let's say if it was 2 to 3 feet below the green surface, let's say it's, you know, maybe an extra foot or two below, which makes you really have to figure out, you know, what type of shot you want to play. And, you know, if you're going to try to hit the spinner, you really got to spin it. And I think that's one of the more difficult chips on the golf course, running all the way into that penalty area. But the second shot is made so difficult. Why? It's, you know, guys hit plenty of mid iron, long iron, iron shots into, you know, greens that are similar size, and they don't have issues with it. But the problem with this setup is it's not marked as a red penalty area. It's not lateral. And this is marked as a yellow penalty area. So what does that mean? So with a red penalty area, you're able to take two club lengths of where it crossed. Or even if you hook it in there and your golf ball, you know, rolls across the green, there's a chance you could drop on the fringe and putt. But with the yellow, it doesn't matter. You always have to drop the drop zone or take it on the line and where it crossed and take it all the way back with the pin. But there's nowhere to go other than where the drop zone would be. So basically it's like an out of bounds and a half or you know, half of an out of bounds basically when you hit it over there, because now the up and down for five is made that much more difficult. So that's why players get a little tentative on that second shot. And then they know if they bail right, that up and down is very difficult, like I kind of just described.
All right, we'll stay on the second nine here and move to hole number 14, Chinese Fir, which this one I selected because I thought it was interesting hearing Scotty talk about this specific green, the slopes you can use and how it catered to his shot shape, especially hitting wedges in on this hole and providing some scoring opportunities, especially on a Sunday. So let's hear from Scotty on Chinese Fir.
The pin on Sunday is one that you can attack. You know, they put it there in the middle of the green. You got the big slope back left that brings the ball back down to the pin. And, you know, I've just hit really good wedge shots. You know, I remember the shot in 2022. It was kind of a wedge that I really trapped in there and hit hard. And I think it was a similar shot in 2024.
Just hearing Scotty talk about the shape of the screen and how, you know, there are certain greens, of course, we've discussed that, you know, you really got to play safe, even if you'd like to make a birdie. But this is one where you can capitalize on a Sunday if you need to get one back here.
Especially with that whole location, but this, the whole contour of the fairway works towards Ray's Creek. So it's a dogleg left, plays a little uphill off the tee. But where the ball typically lands, it can get a little fast on the right side of that fairway. So sometimes you'll be seeing guys hit three wood to help them turn it over, but also to keep it short from running through on the right side to where you have some overhanging limb problems. Another hole in which if you hit it left off this tee into the trees, not a good place to be. You'd much rather be in the right side to where you're playing more up the hill versus like your punch shot is kind of running down the hill. But if you do find the fairway, that is definitely the easiest hole location. But again, this, the front of this green, you wouldn't believe how big that false front is on the front. Just enormous. And when they put the pins right on top of that false front, especially on the left side and on the right side of the green, you just always have to be past it. You know, if you make your mistake, if you're in between clubs, hit it harder, make sure you're past it, because if you leave it short, and if you happen to be downwind, it's a really, really tough four. So it's a hole, yes, you can make a birdie on a really, really nice day, but when it's nasty out or if it's windy out, this hole becomes really complicated because this green has so much slope to it. And then two, it's really hard slope from left to right. So especially that left and the back left pin, those are some really challenging ones where you feel like some days you feel like you just have to like hit hook shots into the left pins there.
Scotty, I think, benefits in this video from the perspective that he was protecting a lead both times on Sunday. Whereas I think I'm curious your opinion, if you're headed to that, those last nine holes of your tournament on a Sunday at the Masters and you're circling holes where you're trying to make birdie, I'm assuming you're happy to take a par at 11. You're happy to take a par at 12. Where does this fall at 13 and 15? Obviously, par fives, trying to capitalize on those. Is this high on your ranking list of like, you got to go make a red number here if you want to kind of chase down a leader?
Yeah, it's one of the easiest short irons to that Sunday pin, like Scotty was talking about. But some of the other hole locations, it's not as green light, very much so protecting against coming up short. So it just all depends on where the hole location is at the 14th.
Yeah. Well, let's finish up, Smiley, with one of the more iconic par threes in the world, the 16th Redbud. And you're going to hear Scotty here talking, of course, about this hole in this setting, but also just at large, just the way this tournament is set up, the way Augusta National is set up. I think it's a cool way to wrap our discussion about the Masters here, just hearing the way he thinks about the risk reward proposal that we see at Augusta National.
Surrounding the hole, the shadows at that time of night when you're playing late on Sunday are always really dramatic. And it's another thing that I love about the way Augusta sets it up on Sunday is they put the pin in the back left and you hit a really good shot up the middle of that green, you can get in there close. But if you miss left, there's water and there's the bunker. And then if you miss right, it's a really, really difficult two putt. What guys want is they want to get rewarded for good shots and punished for bad ones. And I think Augusta really does the best job of that on Sundays.
Especially on Sundays.
Oh, I just think that's so cool. Just, I mean, where he starts that clip of just the drama of just the sun setting and less light, and you're getting the shadows there. But yeah, just maybe pick up on that there, Smiley, of just the way this course is set up to provide the most drama possible as this tournament comes to a close.
Yeah, Sunday you get a lot of bucket pins, so you have a lot of chances to use the slopes to get it close. For instance, the day I shot 81, it felt like a yard or two away from being on the correct sides of the slopes to where the balls are funneling in, having easy tap-ins. And then if you don't, you're left with really, really testy, fast putts or chips. And I had those all day. So it's the exact fine line you look for, where sometimes the good shots aren't quite good enough, and you have to be that much more precise on a Sunday. But the 16th is a great example, because that left hole location, when they tuck it up next to that bunker on Sunday, you know exactly where to hit it. Everybody sitting in the stands knows exactly where you're supposed to hit it. And if you don't, you leave it up there to the right, such a hard two putt. And then I was in the left bunker on Sunday, and it's a lonely place in there. It just feels like everybody's like, well, look at this idiot, you know.
That's one of the places you're not supposed to go.
And then there's the right hole location, that's like just over the bunker, that I think is one that actually can go be a little more aggressive at, because just missing right of that hole location actually isn't that bad. It's a fairly easy chip. You can actually take a putter out at times and putt it. But the hardest hole location, I think, on the green, there's a shelf that's in the back right center of the green that's tucked up right next to the back right bunker, where that's a insanely tough up and down if you happen to hit it in there. But it's just a really tough shelf to get your ball nestled up there, because it's really only about 10 to 15 feet really of width you're working with as far as how accurate you have to be. And then of course, same with the overall distance you have to hit it. So I think that's the most difficult pin on the green. The Sunday pin is maybe one of the easier pins on the green, but again, it can be such an easy, when you bail out short and right, it can be really tough to putt.
Well, there you have it, Smiley. Fun little look at six different holes around Augusta National. Obviously, of course, set up by Scottie Scheffler, the two-time champion. Then some additional thoughts from you. Nice little history there, memorable history at Augusta National. So we're excited to obviously see the property in person and dig into a little more of what Scottie's talking about there. We are hoping to, at this point, maybe be launching into a Valero Texas Open recap with you fresh off the course with a winner newly crowned. That is contingent on timing of some flights and things that are going to get you on an airplane to Georgia. So before we get to that recap, whether it's you or whether it's me sitting in an Airbnb and just giving you a random set of thoughts that maybe you texted me before you hopped on the plane, we have another partner that we're excited to kind of join the show this week, and it is House of Atlas. And so, Smiley, you've not been home yet. They sent you a great care package. All right, I already have, this is one third of my care package, actually one sixth of my care package. This is the little tactical razor right here. Or is this the tactical razor? And there's like, or this is the gunmetal razor. And the tactical razor is sitting in my bathroom right now. They sent over some shave cream, some aftershave. So we've documented my beard journey on the show a little bit the past few weeks. We're kind of back. We went clean shaven. We hated it. I think we're going to keep it. But I'll tell you this, Smiley. I tested a little test drive last night with the House of Atlas kit, and I got to tell you, buddy, it's booting the old routine out immediately. Like this has to be clean down here.
Yeah,
you know. Mm-hmm. And ever since I got the surgery here, you know, it can kind of catch on there. So you got to it's the type of shave cream you can use. It's a very delicate situation. So,
well, we know with my baby face, a beard necessarily has never looked great on me. So I've always been someone to shave. I actually have to shave more now than I ever have, which. Humble brag, I guess I should say. It's maybe not every day, but it's every other day. And I have super sensitive skin, dry skin. So I'm very particular about shaving. So I'm very excited to give this a test drive when I get home. If I ever get home on this 9 out of 10, it's actually 9 out of 10 weeks in a row on the road. I'm so excited to play golf. I'm so excited to just hit balls for 30 minutes and just get away.
Hit some balls, sleep in your own bed, and have a nice shave. with House of Atlas. So
there you go.
Here's your quick review. The shave cream, really nice glide to it. Okay. No catching, just smooth shave all the way through. And then when you clean up and you finish, you put the aftershave on. I got to bed late last night. I was packing, and man, it's like, oh, you smell nice. Like, yeah.
Fran likes the aftershave smell too. She's really, that's the one thing that will always catch her off guard is when you throw a little aftershave on. It's like, heyo, who is this guy walking in? And that's something that you can just pull, you know, a little rabbit out of the hat every now and then. Right. Just a little surprise. It's like, hey. What's up?
still got my fastball. It's like putting a leather jacket on. You know, hey, look, who's this guy? But it's got a nice lotion to it too, so it's soothing. It smells good.
Oh, I like the lotion aspect. I'm a huge.
You're gonna love it
with dry skin. Yeah,
can't do it. So you're gonna be all set up by House of Atlas when you get home. We're so new into this partnership that I don't have our discount code yet. I'm gonna give it to you very, very soon. But you're gonna get 15% off your first order when you use our discount code. So in the meantime, go check out houseofatlas.com, and we're gonna get you all dialed in on the shaving front.
So maybe we should have the comment section say what the discount code name should be. Just to keep us honest.
That might prove to be difficult to actually integrate that, but if you'd like to put some fun suggestions in the comments, we could pass them on. That's the very least we can do. And then if whether or not we use it, at least we had a fun time commenting. So
like a really long discount code name, like Charlie looks awful without a beard.
Yes. Charlie keeps and then the beard.
An alternating capital letter, lowercase letter.
I think the beard is largely going to be here to stay, but I will say that everything underneath the beard and just a little bit on top of the beard, got the House of Atlas to take care of that. Okay. So thank you to them. They're the new sponsor.
How about us?
So let's get to a Valero Texas Open recap of some form or fashion. We'll find out if it's you or it's me on the other side of this transition. And hopefully you're still alive after choking your Starbucks coffee. All right.
What's up, guys? At the airport here, about to head to the Augusta National for the Masters. Wanted to give a little recap of the Valero Texas Open. Really a fun week, a wild week when it came to the weather. Really warm temperatures on Thursday, Friday, which saw some low scores considering what we were expected to see at the Valero Texas Open. And a happy hour, of course, this past Friday was incredible, having Jordan Spieth, Jack Nicklaus, and Maverick McNealy join. And the best bit from that whole deal was with Jack Nicklaus sitting down. He said, you know, have you played any recently? I said, well, I've played a couple times this year. And he asked where. I was like, well, I played at Ponte Vedra Inn and Club, course right across the street from the Players' Championship. And I don't think he really quite understood that I was actually just playing for fun and not playing in an actual event. So I had a good laugh with Jack Nicklaus about that. And, of course, so fun to have Jack on the desk. That was pretty surreal for me. And, of course, Jordan Spieth being there as well. So a really fun Friday. And Maverick McNealy, of course, having a good week. And, you know, the weekend was crazy. It was hard. And Brian Harman showed up with the lead on Saturday, was able to keep it for two straight days. Nobody really even getting too close to his lead. So big congratulations to Brian Harman, obviously playing with a heavy heart. And it got a little dicey out there. You know, Saturday he managed his game really well, scrambled fantastic. But Sunday got a little loose, especially on the ninth hole where he missed a drive over there to the right, takes an unplayable, makes a double bogey. And then the back nine, he was flawless. What he was able to do around the greens on the back nine, making the putts when he had to, and then kind of on 15, 16, letting it get away a bit, but nobody really made quite a push at him. Andrew Novak got within two. Ryan Gerard tried to make a push. But overall, Brian Harman, he was so steady, so patient, resilient, and just the grindy type of competitor that you had to be at the Valero Texas Open on this weekend in some of the most difficult conditions that I've seen in a long time. So huge congrats to Brian Harman. Really fun Valero Texas Open, and ready to get to the Masters. So see you there.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our first lovely time fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too. So please keep it up.
For all the good people of YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes, so I'm happy to come on and shoot the